Series, a cyber seminar series hosted by VIREC, the VA Information Resource Center. Thank you to CIDR for providing technical and promotional support. The CMS Data Mini-Series explores how data from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, are a valuable resource for learning about healthcare veterans receive outside the Veterans Health Administration. Sessions will focus on types of data available, methods for using the data in research, limitations of the data, requirements for access, and examples of VA research that use these data. This slide shows the next upcoming session for the series, which are typically held quarterly on the second Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Eastern. More information about this series and other VIREC cyber seminars are available on VIREC's website, and you can view past sessions on HSR's VIREC cyber seminar archives. A quick reminder to those of you just signing on, slides are available to download. This is a screenshot of a sample email you should have received a few hours before the session, and in it you will find the link to download the slides. These slides will also be available in the cyber seminar archive within a few days. And before I introduce our presenter, let's begin with a couple poll questions to get to know our audience better. So both of these polls will come up at once on your screen. The first poll, can you advance to slide 5 for me? There we go. The first poll, what is your primary role in projects using VA data? Please select one, investigator, co-IPI, statistician, methodologist, biostatistician, data manager, analyst, or programmer, project coordinator, or other. And if you select other, please go into the chat function, write your job title in there. And then if you scroll down, you can see the second poll question, how many years of experience working with VA data? None, I'm brand new to this. 1 year or less, more than one, less than 3 years, at least three, less than 7 years, at least seven, less than 10 years, 10 years or more. After you select your two responses, please be sure to scroll all the way down to the bottom and press submit so that your answers are recorded. And I will turn it over to Whitney to share the results with us.
Thank you, Molly. So I'm just going to go ahead and hang on 1 second, close this poll out. Oh, my apologies. Close the poll and share the results. For what is your primary role? We have 15% said investigator, PI, co-I, 6% said B, statistician, methodologist, biostatistician, 21% said C, data manager, analyst, or programmer, 6% said D, project coordinator, and then 9% said E, other, and some of those others are NIDDKPO. And that was the only one for that. And then for poll number 2, how many years of experience? We have 11% said A, none, I'm brand new to this. 15% said B, 1 year or less. 13% said C, more than one, less than three. 9% said D, at least three, less than seven. And then 2% said E, at least 7, less than 10. And lastly, 2% said F, 10 years or more. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Molly.
Thank you, Whitney. And we have two more poll questions that are more specific to today's presentation. So we'll go ahead and put those up on the screen at this time. And again, they're both running at the same time, so you can select both responses in your polling pane. And Kristen, can you advance to the next slide for me, please? Thank you. So we would like to know, are you involved in a research project studying veterans with COVID-19? Yes, currently. No, but will be soon. No, but might be in the future. So go ahead and select one of those responses, and then you can scroll down to poll number 4. How would you rate your overall knowledge of CMS data? The answers go between 1 and 5, 1 being no knowledge, all the way up to 5 being expert level knowledge. So please select your response for that poll as well. And then again, don't forget to press submit at the bottom so that we can record your responses.
Thank you, Molly. I'm going to go ahead and close out the poll. I think everyone's all right. submitted their answer choices. Just one more. Okay. All right, the poll is closed. Share the results. We have 24% said A, yes, currently. 3% said B, no, but will soon. And then 42% said C, no, but might in the future. And then for how would you rate your overall knowledge, we have 32% said A, 1, no knowledge. 23% said B, 2. 9% said C, 3. And 6% said D, 4. Lastly, 0% said E for 5, expert knowledge. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Molly.
Great. Thank you so much, Whitney. And at this time, I would like to introduce our presenter for the day. Again, today's presentation is titled Using CMS Data to Study COVID-19 in Veterans and will be presented by Kristen DeGroot. Ms. DeGroot is the project director on the VA CMS Data for Research Project at VIREC, the VA Information Resource Center. She has extensive experience using Medicare and Medicaid data for VA research. I want to thank you for joining us today. And Kristen, can I turn things over to you now?
Yes, thank you, Molly. Okay, so I first want to show three numbers which demonstrate why it's important to include data from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, when studying COVID-19 in veterans. First, there are almost 1 million veterans with a COVID-19 diagnosis only found in the CMS data and not in the VA data. Second, there are almost 34,000 Medicare hospitalizations among veterans within the first 60 days after testing positive for COVID in a VA facility. And third, there are about 1.7 million veterans that received their COVID-19 vaccinations through Medicare or Medicaid, and this is above and beyond those that have been the vaccines that have been reported to the VA. So some people listening to this presentation will have used CMS data in the past, but even experienced users should be aware that there's some differences in the data in the past few years. Most of these were temporary changes that CMS made in its billing policies in response to the public health emergency. So when there's a difference in the data from what you'd normally find, I've added a yellow star to the slide. But as you know, the public health emergency ended in May 2023, so some of the changes that were put into place during the pandemic have ended or will end in the near future. So I just wanted to provide a few resources for tracking these changes, which could be important if you're studying something that was affected by the pandemic or if you just have any kind of study that spans a long time period. So here's an outline for my session today. First, I'll give an overview of CMS data and the types of data that are available. And then I'll talk about CMS data, using CMS data to identify veterans who've been diagnosed with COVID-19. I'll discuss data that are available for researchers who want to include people both with and without COVID, with a focus on COVID-related topics like tests and vaccines. And lastly, I'll review where to find more information about the data and how to request it. So first, intro to CMS data. And the section I'm going to present today is an abbreviated version of some information I've provided in some other cyber seminars. So if you want more information about CMS data and then specifically about Medicare data or Medicaid data, you can check out these other sessions archived on the website. So the two main programs within CMS are Medicare and Medicaid. And people can be enrolled in one or both of these programs. Medicare is the federal program that provides health insurance to people 65 and older, people who are disabled or have end-stage renal disease. It's a national program, so the benefits are the same to everyone across the country. Medicaid is the joint state and federal program, and CMS at the federal level sets the minimum standards both for eligibility and benefits, and then states have the option to offer coverage to additional groups or add additional benefits if they choose to do so. Within both Medicare and Medicaid, care can be provided through fee-for-service or a managed care program. Within Medicare, the fee-for-service program is sometimes referred to as Original Medicare, and the managed care program is called Medicare Advantage. Medicare beneficiaries can choose whether to receive care through fee-for-service or Medicare Advantage. And among veterans, about two-thirds in Medicare have the fee-for-service coverage as opposed to Medicare Advantage. Within Medicaid, most care is provided via managed care, but it varies greatly by state and eligibility group. So because almost everyone 65 and older qualifies for Medicare, we see very different enrollment patterns among people under 65 compared to those over 65. So being shown here is veterans under 65. And among those veterans under 65 who are enrolled in VHA, about 8% are in Medicare, which would be due to either disability or end-stage renal disease. 7% are in Medicaid, and 2% are in both programs. Among people 65 and older, age alone is enough to qualify for Medicare, so almost everyone over 65 is enrolled in Medicare. And low-income veterans can be enrolled in both Medicare and Medicaid, which we see in about 6% of veterans over 65. And if a veteran is eligible for Medicare or Medicaid, they can enroll in these programs and use services through these programs, regardless of whether or not they have access to healthcare at the VA. So sometimes the question comes up, where in the VA data can I find information about whether or not a veteran uses care outside the VA paid for by Medicare or Medicaid? And the short answer is you can't. For the most part, the payer will determine where you find data. So services paid for by VA, whether provided in a VA facility or in the community, will end up in the VA data. Services paid for by Medicare or Medicaid are found in the CMS data. Medicare and Medicaid do not bill VA, and VA doesn't bill them. Occasionally, information on healthcare received outside VA is reported by the patient back to the VA. So, for example, the VA collects information on COVID vaccines received outside VA. And while this data may be accurate, I would consider it to be incomplete. So this next slide is about the sources of VA and CMS data at a high level and how the different sources result in different data. So in the VA, when a veteran receives care at a VA facility, the data is entered into an EHR, and this is the data that makes its way into databases like CDW that can be used by researchers. If a patient sees a provider outside the VA that will be paid for by Medicare or Medicaid, the provider will likely still enter data into an EHR, but this is not what we consider CMS data. The path for healthcare paid by Medicare and Medicaid to make its way into these databases is a little more nuanced, but it really all comes back to providers seeking reimbursement for the services rendered. So this slide is going to be a little more complicated than the previous one, but I think it's important to understand where the data come from and how it gets there and how it affects the timing of data availability. So when a patient sees a provider through Medicare fee-for-service, the provider submits the claim or the bill to CMS. And after CMS pays the claim, the data is made available to researchers. The Medicare fee-for-service process is the simplest one I'll be showing, and this is also the data that's available to researchers most quickly. When a patient is enrolled in Medicare managed care, the provider submits a claim or a bill to the insurance company, not to CMS. But the insurance company is required to provide information about that encounter, to provide that information back to CMS. And then these encounters are made available to researchers. And we see the same steps occurring on the Medicaid side, except it's the states, not CMS, that administer the program and pay the claims and receive the encounters. And because the data are collected at the state level, there's an additional step before the Medicaid data become available to researchers. All of the state level data need to be standardized into a national format, which also adds delays to the data being available for research use. So going back to the diagram I showed earlier and how that relates to the data available. So researchers have access to Medicare fee-for-service data, and this is the data that's available most quickly because there are the fewest steps between when the healthcare service is provided and when the information gets to CMS. Next, we have the Medicare Advantage data and the Medicaid data. And note here with the Medicaid data that the fee-for-service records and the managed care records are in the same data sets. You'll also see a third blue box up here at the top, the assessment data. So I didn't mention the assessment data earlier on the earlier slide because it's not a program that people enroll in. Assessments are tools that document and assess a patient's health status and functional status. And this information is collected at various points in time, such as at start and end of care, when there's a significant change in health status, and at least quarterly. And the data have multiple purposes, such as tracking or planning patient care needs. They're used to measure quality of care at a facility, and they are also used to determine a provider's payment, which is related to the amount of care that's anticipated the patient will need. And there's two types of assessment data that we might use when studying COVID-19, and these are referred to as MDS and OASIS. And the MDS is a tool used in nursing facilities, and the data is collected on all patients in CMS-certified nursing facilities, regardless of payer. So there's going to be information in here that's not found in any of the Medicare or Medicaid data sets. Second is OASIS. This is for patients receiving home health care paid for by Medicare or Medicaid. But one of the biggest benefits of the assessment data is that it's available relatively quickly, similar to the time frame as the Medicare fee-for-service data. So while the care in these files is often found in the Medicare and Medicaid data too, you know, the billing data, you can get information about nursing home stays and home care more quickly by using the MDS and OASIS data, especially if you're interested in the care paid for by Medicare Advantage or Medicaid. So here's a summary of the current data availability. I want to point out a few things. All of the data have both preliminary and final versions. And the preliminary data will always be replaced by a final version of the data. The Medicare enrollment data and fee-for-service data in the top row, along with the assessment data in the bottom row, are the data that's available most quickly, with Medicare Advantage and Medicaid 1 to 2 years behind them. And all of the data listed in this table, both final and preliminary, will be updated in the next few months since we are currently in the process of receiving an additional year of data from CMS. So I also want to touch on what is included in the data. And because this is mostly billing data, data elements that are required for the provider to be reimbursed are likely to be accurate and complete. In contrast, information that isn't required for billing either won't be in the data or should be considered incomplete. So a few things I want to point out. Symptoms are sometimes included in the claim in the form of ICD-10 diagnosis codes. And while those may be accurate, I wouldn't trust them to be complete. Next, while the fact that tests are performed are included in the CMS data, because that's what CMS will pay for, the results of these tests are typically not included. Lastly, many Medicare and Medicaid reimbursed services are part of a prospective payment system or bundled system. So the provider gets paid a set amount based on various things like the type of procedure being performed or how sick the patient is. And this is especially important to keep in mind when studying inpatient care. The level of detail in the Medicare and Medicaid inpatient data is significantly less than what you'd find in like the VA inpatient data. In general, the providers will include diagnosis and procedure codes needed to get the appropriate level of reimbursement, but they probably won't include more information beyond what's required. So if you're looking for information specifically on inpatient drugs, I would consider the data in Medicare and Medicaid inpatient claims to be incomplete. So next we're going to talk about identifying veterans with COVID-19 in the CMS data. So as I just mentioned on the previous slide, the CMS data doesn't include lab or test results because it's billing data, not clinical data. However, the data does include ICD-10 diagnosis codes like the ones shown here. So are diagnosis codes as good as test results? The quote on the right is actually from CMS and reminds users that the ICD-10 codes in the claims and encounter data are considered less reliable than clinical data. However, there have been a lot of studies, especially early in the pandemic, that showed that the ICD-10 diagnosis code for COVID-19, U07.1, found in the billing data is quite accurate. So all the studies I'm showing here are focused on the ICD-10 code, and they compared lab results with claims or other administrative data. So in addition to the results on the previous slide, I also want to highlight some language from the CDC's official guidelines for the use of the ICD-10 codes U07.1. And note here that providers are instructed to use that code only for confirmed cases of COVID-19 and to not use the code for suspected or possible cases. I also want to point out that the documentation of a positive COVID test result by itself is one of the situations where the code U07.1 is appropriate. A lot of other medical conditions require an official diagnosis from a healthcare provider, not just a test result. But as we know, especially early in the pandemic, many people got tested without going through a healthcare provider, which I'll note is another exception to the rule due to COVID. And based on this information, it appears that U07.1 can, with some confidence, in my opinion, be used to indicate a positive test result. So when the VA receives data from CMS, the ICD-10 codes related to COVID are listed in the claim with all the other diagnosis codes and a lot of other information. And so in order to make it easier to identify which veterans had a COVID diagnosis, VIREC started creating user-friendly files in the fall of 2020. And these files were updated through the end of 2022 and included Medicare fee-for-service data and some VA data, but no other CMS data due to delays in the availability of the other CMS data. But in the middle of 2023, we decided we wanted to incorporate some of the other CMS data sources. So we overhauled the structure and content of the files that we create. And while the files now include information from other CMS sources, they no longer include any VA data. And while I'm mentioning both of these types of files that VIREC created, note that we're currently only distributing the second types of files that I'm going to present, the newer ones. I'm presenting both of the files because many projects already received those first original files. So I didn't want to forget them. So the first files we created consisted of two data sets. The person file that included everyone who had a COVID-19 diagnosis in Medicare fee-for-service data or had a positive test in the VA and was enrolled in Medicare. We also had created a post-diagnosis stay file that included inpatient and skilled nursing facility stays in the first 60 days after a person's first COVID diagnosis or positive test. And both of these files revolved around the date of the person's first diagnosis or positive test. So in addition to wanting to add in other CMS data into the new files, we wanted to be able to identify all of a person's COVID diagnoses, not just the first infection. So the files we distribute now includes one record per COVID diagnosis found in any of the CMS files. We searched all of the CMS files for these five codes. The final data set includes only a few variables, including scrambled SSN, from and through dates, the ICD-10 diagnosis code, and the source where that code was found. We searched for the diagnosis codes in four different types of data, Medicare fee-for-service, Medicare Advantage, Medicaid, and assessment data. Each of these types of data had several data sets that were searched, and each contained a different time frame. But if you combine the data from each of these sources, you end up with 9.3 million records or 9.3 million diagnosis codes for 1.4 million people. So here's some frequencies from that file. About two-thirds of all the COVID-related diagnosis codes are found in the Medicare fee-for-service data. And this really isn't surprising since it has the largest number of enrollees and it has some of the most recent data. When we look at the ICD-10 diagnosis codes, 75% of the records we identified contain U07.1, which is the primary code for COVID-19. 12% of records indicate a personal history of COVID. 1.4% indicate long COVID, which was the last of these codes to be introduced in late 2021. And the last code on the list, B97.29, other coronavirus, was primarily used in March 2020 before U07.1 was introduced. So if you combine this data with the VA's COVID data, we find that through June 23, we can identify 1.8 million people who have at least one COVID diagnosis in CMS data or a positive test in the VA. And about 5% of these people had a diagnosis and positive test in both systems. I also want to point out, among the 791,000 who tested positive in VA only, 43% of these are also enrolled in Medicare, so these people may be receiving health care outside the VA too. So this chart shows the number of COVID cases in the VA. So this is similar to the last slide, the big yellow circle on the last slide, broken down by age groups. But once we combine this with the Medicare data, the picture changes dramatically. So here are the COVID cases by age group after combining the VA and the CMS data. So the green represents people found in both systems, and the blue cases are found only in the CMS data. So among people under 65, we know that only about 1 in 6 are enrolled in either Medicare or Medicaid. So these modest increases in those age groups are expected. But among veterans 65 and older, about 70% of the COVID cases are found only in the CMS data, and the proportion of cases found only in CMS increases with age. So as you can imagine, there are differences in the people who were diagnosed in Medicare compared to those diagnosed in the VA. And the information I'm going to show on this slide is summarized from a poster presented last year, which you can access from the link at the bottom of the slide. So our Medicare data includes not just active VHA users, but also includes former VHA users and VHA enrollees. And when we compare those who were diagnosed with COVID in Medicare to those diagnosed in VA, we see that there's a much lower proportion of veterans diagnosed in Medicare that have used VA primary care in the 2 years prior to their diagnosis. And this is not surprising. If you're using VA for your primary care, you're more likely to come to VA for your COVID test. When we look at demographics, we see that with those with a COVID diagnosis only in the Medicare data, we see more older veterans, just like we saw on the previous slide. We also saw more people enrolled in Medicaid, more females, more people of white race, and more people who died compared to veterans who were diagnosed with COVID in the VA. So shifting gears a little, I want to highlight some treatments that you can find looking in the CMS data. So the first is inpatient treatments. So as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, details about inpatient drugs are usually not included in the claims because they aren't required for reimbursement. But CMS has implemented a new COVID-19 add-on payment to allow hospitals to be reimbursed for new procedures and drugs in addition to the amount that they'd normally be paid for the hospitalization. And these treatments listed here are coded using ICD-10 procedure codes or NDC codes. In general, outpatient drugs will be found in the Medicare Part D data or the Medicaid prescription drug file using NDC codes. Note, though, that from 2021 to late 2023, the U.S. government covered the cost of some drugs like Lagevrio and Paxlovid, and if there's no charge, you won't find a record in the CMS data. This changed in late 2023 when the cost was shifted from the U.S. government to the commercial market, including CMS and other insurance companies. So probably starting in late 23 forward, you will find this data in the Medicare Part D or Medicaid data. Monoclonal antibody treatments will be found in the outpatient data using HCPCS codes. And as I've already mentioned about Lagevrio and Paxlovid, coverage or cost sharing for these treatments may vary by time period. So be sure to check this if your study period spans multiple years. So last, I'm going to talk, or second to last, I will talk about CMS data on COVID-19 tests, vaccines, and a few other topics. So the blue box is the topics directly related to COVID, and then the second thing I will go over is things more widely related to the pandemic. But I'm going to start talking about tests, COVID tests, and vaccines. So Medicare pays for COVID-19 tests, but similar to COVID-related treatments, the types of tests and the situations covered will vary by time period. Currently, in early 2024, Medicare fee-for-service pays for only COVID tests that were ordered by a healthcare provider, but at other points in time, they covered COVID tests without a doctor's orders, and they covered at-home tests. Some Medicare Advantage plans and Medicaid plans may continue to cover these tests, but it will vary by plan and by time period. And these tests can be identified in the data using CPT and HCPCS codes. From the data, we know the date, the provider, and sometimes the place of service, although about half of the claims for COVID tests have a place of service laboratory, so that doesn't tell us anything about where the specimen was collected. We also have ICD-10 diagnosis codes related to the test, which is usually used to indicate the reason for the test, but as we saw earlier, in the case of COVID, may also be used to indicate a test result. So in the CMS data, we found over 15 million COVID tests, again, mostly in the Medicare fee-for-service data, and this represents 4 million people. If we look at the primary diagnosis codes on these records, we see that the top several codes are due to screening or suspected exposure to COVID or other diseases. 7% of claims for COVID tests include a primary diagnosis of U07.1. So to me, a 7% positivity rate seems pretty reasonable. Okay, so moving on to vaccines. Medicare and Medicaid pay for the administration of COVID-19 vaccinations without cost sharing, at least through the end of FY24, and I suspect they will continue to be available for no charge into the future. It is important to know that in calendar year 21, all COVID vaccinations for Medicare enrollees were paid by the Medicare fee-for-service program, even for the patients enrolled in Medicare Advantage. So their vaccines are found in the fee-for-service claims data. However, starting in calendar year 22, things go back to normal with the vaccination records for Medicare Advantage enrollees being found in the Medicare Advantage data, as we would expect. So COVID vaccinations are identified with HCPCS codes, and these codes can tell us the brand or type of the vaccine and whether it was like the first, the second, the third, or a booster. Another important thing to note is that through most of the public health emergency, CMS would reimburse providers only for the administration of the vaccine, not the vaccine itself, because the vaccines were paid for by the federal government. Like this is very similar to what we saw with Lagevrio and Paxlovid. However, since late 2023, the federal government is no longer paying for the vaccines up front, but providers can submit claims to CMS both for the vaccines and the administration of the vaccines now. So earlier in the presentation, I mentioned a few VIREC-created user-friendly files containing people with a COVID diagnosis found in the CMS data. And in a similar vein, we also created files about people who received COVID vaccines. So starting in 2021, we created two files, a person file that had one record per person who had a COVID vaccine in the Medicare fee-for-service data. We also offered a details file that contained one record per HCPCS code in the COVID HCPCS code for the COVID vaccines. But just like with the diagnosis file, we overhauled the files in 2023 to make it easier to bring in data from other CMS sources. The new file, which we just call the vaccine file, is very similar to the old details file in that it contains one record per HCPCS code for each COVID vaccine in the CMS data. So I can't list all of the HCPCS codes we searched because the list is very long, but the full list of codes can be found on the website listed here. The news summary file includes scrambled SSN, vaccination date, the HCPCS codes, the source of the HCPCS codes, and the type or brand of vaccine. And we searched for the vaccine HCPCS codes in three different types of data: Medicare fee-for-service, Medicare Advantage, and Medicaid. The assessment data weren't searched because they don't contain any procedure codes. So each of these types of data has several data sets that were searched, and each contain a different time frame of data. If you combine the data from each of these sources, you end up with 6.8 million records for 3 million people. When we look at the current data, we see almost all vaccines are found in the Medicare fee-for-service data. And this isn't surprising since the Medicare Advantage program didn't start paying for COVID vaccinations until 2022, and the 2022 data isn't available yet. There's also a relatively small number of vaccines in the Medicaid data for the veteran population. The number of vaccines in the CMS data is almost evenly divided between Pfizer and Moderna, with only a small number of people in the CMS data receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. If we combine the VA's COVID vaccine data with the CMS's data, we have a total of 7.5 million people who received vaccines through June 2023. And while the majority of people have at least one vaccine found in the VA data, so that's the purple and the green wedges, 1.7 million people have COVID vaccines found only in the CMS data. And based on some analysis we did last year, which you can access from the link at the bottom, there's a strong correlation between source of COVID vaccine and recent healthcare use. So that's very similar to what we saw with the source of the COVID diagnosis also. So if you have a cohort of patients that may not have used VA healthcare in the past 2 or 3 years, it will be important to add in these vaccines. Also note that you'll want to use the CMS data if you want to know about all vaccines that were received. So almost 1.2 million people, represented by the green wedge here, have vaccines found in both VA and the CMS data. What I didn't show on the last slide is the number of veterans that didn't receive a vaccine, or at least didn't receive it in the VA or the CMS data. Lack of vaccines in the data doesn't mean a person didn't receive it. In fact, a CMS analysis compared the number of vaccines in the Medicare claims data to the numbers reported by the CDC, and among people 65 and older, only half of the expected vaccines were found in the Medicare claims data. So keep this in mind when using vaccine data. Lastly, I want to show a few examples of types of care that the pandemic affected on a wider scale. So first is a focus on delayed care. So one example of care that may have been rescheduled or canceled is colonoscopies, which can be identified in the Medicare data using HCPCS codes. This chart shows the monthly number of colonoscopies in the Medicare fee-for-service data and the Medicare Advantage data 2019 to 2021. So you can see the sharp drop off in spring 2020 and a smaller dip in the following winter. But for the most part, it's 2021 was mostly back to how things were in 2019. A second thing to highlight is the drastic increase in telehealth visits. So in the past, telehealth visits were identified using a place of service code for telehealth. But in April 2020, new CPT or HCPCS modifiers were released for telemedicine. And the numbers for 2019 are so low, in comparison to 2020, you can't even really see them on this chart. but it jumps from about 4,000 visits per month to about 1 million visits per month in April 2020 if you combine the Medicare fee-for-service and Medicare Advantage. So lastly, here's an example of nursing home assessments. So this is one that wasn't affected by the pandemic as much as I thought it would be. I had to double check the numbers here to make sure they were right. There was a downward trend throughout 2019 before COVID hit, but then the numbers remained relatively stable after April 2020. So lastly, I'm going to talk about where to go to get more information about the data. So VIRECS VA CMS Data for Research Project is the data stored for all CMS data used for VA research, including Medicare data, Medicaid, Medicare survey data, patient assessments like MDS and OASIS, and the USRDS data, which is the registry for patients with end-stage renal disease. We've been distributing data and providing assistance to VA researchers at no cost since 2003. At VIREP, we have an entire portion of our intranet website dedicated to researchers who plan to use or are using CMS data. And here you'll find information about our pre-request consultation service, which is one-on-one phone calls with researchers planning to use CMS data for their VA research. We can help you determine which CMS data will be most appropriate for the study, review request forms, and answer questions about the request process. You'll also find information on how to request the data, including request forms. And we have descriptions and documentation for all the CMS data that are available for request. If you need data, if you need CMS data within VA, but not for research purposes, you can request the data through the MAC. The MAC is part of the VHA's Chief Strategy Office and is the data steward for CMS data for VHA operational and administrative purposes. So this would include use by VHA program offices or for quality improvement or quality assurance purposes. I'm also going to mention two resources outside VA. First is ResDAC, which is a CMS contractor that provides free assistance and training to researchers using CMS data. They have a help desk, a knowledge base, and webinars, and maybe sometimes in-person workshops. And the final resource is the Chronic Conditions Data Warehouse, or the CCW website. The CCW is actually the source of most of the CMS data that we receive in the VA. And the website has documentation, summary tables and guides, and reports on using the CMS data. Okay, are there any questions?
Thank you, Kristen. Yes, we do have a few questions pending. For our attendees, if you are looking to submit a question, please go to the right-hand side of your screen and you should see a Q&A button. If you do not see it, click on the ellipses in the lower right-hand corner and that should allow you to open up the Q&A pane. Go ahead and write your question in there and don't forget to press submit and we will get to them in the order that they are received. And the first one, pardon me, CMS is transitioning away from Social Security numbers to Medicare beneficiary ID. Could you comment on the impact?
Within the VA, it doesn't really have an impact. So CMS has transitioned over the past several years from the HIC, which is the health insurance claim number, to the Medicare beneficiary ID number. Both of those numbers are masked. Like the VA does not receive either of those numbers. When the data comes through its contractor, it is given a different ID that is non-identifiable. And then once the data comes into the VA, we add the VA scrambled SSN to the data.
Thank you for that response. The next question we have, when would a U07 diagnosis be present in assessment data, but not in the other CMS data sources?
So I think in most cases, it would be present in both sources. It really comes down to timing. So I want to go back to one of my previous slides that shows the data availability. Here we go. So as you can see here, the Medicaid data, you know, and a lot of nursing home stays are covered by Medicaid. So if a person was diagnosed with COVID in a nursing home in 2022, it would not show up in the Medicaid data yet, but it would show up in the MDS. So when we combine these data sources, there will be some overlap for certain types of care that might be covered by both Medicare and Medicaid, or care that might be found in MDS and OASIS plus whichever program covered the cost of it. But yeah, the MDS and OASIS data, in my opinion, they're most useful because they are available so quickly, relatively quickly.
Thank you for that reply. The next question we have, for information regarding COVID-19 hospitalizations, is there still a similar analytic file for each COVID-19 diagnosis?
Let me jump to, okay, can you repeat that question?
Yeah, for information regarding COVID-19 hospitalizations, is there still a similar analytic file for each COVID-19 diagnosis?
So the analytic file that we offer right now is just the diagnosis level file. We do not offer a post-diagnosis stay file anymore. It was getting a little bit too complicated when we had diagnoses coming from multiple CMS sources, and it was all being updated at different points in time throughout the year. And then the stays were being updated several different times throughout the year. But if you are interested in creating a file yourself like that, we would be happy to help you build that and, you know, share code with you if that would be useful.
Thank you. Next question, can you comment on the pandemic impact on seasonal or regular vaccinations in the CMS data?
Okay, I'll pull this one up. I'm assuming this refers to COVID vaccinations. I'm not really going to speak about, you know, other types of vaccinations. I think what we've seen so far in the data is that when the recommendations change about when certain groups should get additional vaccines, we see a bump in the data. I think eventually that will turn into seasonality. I don't know if we have seen that in the data yet.
Thank you. The next question, I'm sorry, it's actually a comment. For CKD, claims are about 20% sensitive compared to labs. Depends on the clinical condition.
Okay, that's good. CKD is chronic kidney disease. And sometimes the claims do have information about lab results in there. So thank you for that comment.
Yes, thank you. That is the final pending question at this time. Do you have any concluding comments you'd like to make while we wait for any further questions?
I do not. Can put this up for a minute. This the links here is for the VA intranet site for the VA CMS for Data for Research project. The internet site is the main VIREC site.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I do want to plug our next session. Kristen will be back presenting for us in July, July 9th at 3 p.m. Eastern. Please tune in for the next CMS Data mini-series session. And Kristen, I believe you will be presenting Medicare data in the OMOP Common Data Model. So
yes,
we would like to see everyone there. And before we let you go, I just want to remind everybody that when you exit the session, a feedback survey is going to populate on your screen. Please take just a moment to fill out those few questions. It does help us improve presentations already given, as well as gives you a chance to suggest topics for new sessions. So once again, I want to thank CIDR. I want to thank all of our attendees for joining us. And a huge thank you to Kristen for presenting today. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.